Welcome back to BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare, educational, and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host, Brian Moore, and thank you for joining us again. Our guest in this episode is Chelsea Greenmore, an architect and design lead with BSA Life Structures, located in our Raleigh, North Carolina studio. Chelsea received her Bachelor of Architecture from Virginia Tech. I wanted to talk to Chelsea about her journey in architecture and the difference between a highly specialized technical expert and someone who sees holistic systems, the building themselves, and how spaces and systems are interconnected. In many of our episodes, you hear from our thought leaders and expertise-driven team members on a fairly specific topic. But we thought it would be fun to hear from a BSA team member who is a jack of all trades and can see things from a different viewpoint. A few months ago, during a visit to our Raleigh studio, I heard Chelsea refer to herself as an architectural generalist, and I was intrigued by exploring what that meant. Chelsea shares several anecdotes, including how her view on architecture for healing and learning is influenced by European plazas, and key considerations when designing a facility for athletes, as well as a couple exciting projects on the boards that overlap all three of BSA's markets. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Welcome to the show, Chelsea.
Hey, Brian. It's good to be here.
Great to have you on. Let's jump in and start with a little background. I usually like to ask all the guests on the show how you got into architecture and where your passion comes from.
So I grew up like a ping pong ball, just moving back and forth between Northern Virginia and Ohio. My parents both worked for the federal government, so at different times we were moving for their jobs. And so we lived in a lot of different houses, and we were always searching for the new house that we were going to live in. And, you know, I was towed along because they didn't know babysitters in the new cities yet. So, you know, some of those houses were older and we got into renovations. Some of them were new builds, and we watched them, you know, come up from the ground. And so I think that was always intriguing to me, even though I've never really designed a house in my career yet. I also love doing jigsaw puzzles and figuring out how everything fit together. And really, I wanted to be creative. I wanted to go into college and I just wanted to sing and to act. And my father said, no, let's find something professional to do. And so I think architecture really found for me the balance between being creative and the skills in math and kind of the technical side science that I also was pretty good at as a kid. And so it became really interesting to see how architects just start to look at the world a little different than anyone else.
That's really cool. I mean, you were talking about growing up and the different houses. So when I was dating my wife in college, she took a class on North American house types. And we would be driving down the road, you know, like she would have class and then the next day we'd be driving somewhere and she would be like, oh, look, a Dutch kicker, you know, and
I wouldn't even know what that is.
Right.
But maybe I've lived in one.
What are you talking about? You know, but just that, you know, obsession over learning different things and stuff. So I want to talk to you about this idea of being a generalist. I heard you say in a meeting recently that you were a generalist, and can you explain what you meant by that?
Sure. So, Even though I've practiced my career in architecture mostly on what we call the healing market and the learning market in healthcare and higher education, I wouldn't call myself one of our specialized experts in either of those markets. I don't know that I see myself being one of those people that gets into the specific function of each and every room and really passionate about where each and every piece of equipment is, even though I can do that. I really think more about buildings as a holistic set of systems that enclose space and allow it to function. So I think much more about the building itself, how spaces and systems are interconnected.
What have you found when you're looking at buildings in terms of what you just said, like spaces and interconnectedness and how that functions in healing and learning, essentially?
So this really became a thing for me when I traveled Europe in my fourth year of architecture school.
Ooh, yeah.
And, you know, we were kind of just dropped in a city and then we traveled from city to city in Europe. And so each city, when you think about it at the big scale like that, these plazas were there functionally in the city to bring food and goods to each kind of area of the city. And it was all based on how far you could walk or how far you could bring a cart of those goods in and out of the city. And so these plazas or these kind of gathering spaces in these cities, in these European cities, are just so fascinating to me because they are dual purpose. They've been there for so long. They've stood the test of time. And so, you know, it's all about these systems of how to make the city work. And so that's probably where I bring a lot of it back to the healing and learning market, because you still have these systems of how do you people move through the building? How do you bring electricity through the building, air through the building, light through the building, the functions of a space? So when you get into healthcare, you know, medications, nurses, how do you move patients? You know, all these things are systems that we have to design for.
You're right. Some of those cities are thousands of years old, and some of the architecture, hundreds and hundreds of years old. To you, what were some of the cities that you found yourself just kind of, you know, turning your head and staring and thinking a little bit?
Usually the ones that were based in kind of the medieval times.
Yeah.
And they have that kind of medieval core, like you think about London and the way that that city has grown over time. Or Rome is just so fascinating as well. I don't know. I went to a whole handful of cities, so it's hard to choose just one.
Yeah. No, that's really, really cool. What do you think are some of the benefits of being a generalist architect, able to work on a variety of different project types?
I think it's really about cross-pollination for me, the ability to infuse ideas from one market to another. So, you know, when you're thinking about kind of the environmental enclosure, this keeps water and sun and air and all of these things that, you know, we have in this world that have to work appropriately for the building. And then you balance that with the technical systems that keep it functioning and comfortable to be in. And then we talked about circulation already as a system of the building. How do you get people through? How do they find their way? Some of the buildings that we do are very large and complex. And if you think about a healthcare environment, sometimes your emotions are elevated. So how do you make that easy to find your way to where you're supposed to go when you're in a moment of need? So I think it's really about finding the right techniques and the right relationships that all of these things have with one another. And you create a solution that makes sense for that specific purpose of the building.
As you know, and our listeners, I'm sure, I am not an architect or a technical expert, but I've seen you guys have some of these plans where they're almost like heat zones where you can tell some of these high areas of foot traffic, right? So what are some of the tools that you, when you see something like that, what are you thinking of to divert so that it's not orange and red, you know, at a cross section? Or I'm almost even thinking as like roads, right? You know, hallways that are interacting. How do you guys take that information and then figure something new out?
Well, sometimes you want those opportunities where everyone's crossing, right? So I think about a nurse unit. Sometimes some of the goals of these facilities are about having nurses and physicians collaborate more with each other. And so you want some of those areas of the building where people interact more and are kind of almost in a way choreographed to collaborate. So I think about it that way. And if you don't, if you have areas of the building where you want more privacy, you really need to know those sorts of things so you can design other techniques to provide people more privacy.
And divert traffic away from those areas, right?
Yeah.
So it, kind of sticking with that for a minute, how do you adapt your design approach when you're shifting between different projects and different clients?
Well, I think that the design approach and the process generally stay the same. For me, it's about which parts of that design cycle are amped up and are appropriate for that project and maybe even that client. So, you know, probably in the background, we're doing a lot of these things, but it may not be as visible to everyone on the project if it's not appropriate for the project. So we call our design process at BSA the innovation framework.
Yes.
And one of the key components of it that I rely on a lot is alignment. And in alignment, this is where we discover where the value is for a client and for that particular project. And so we're trying to find and design a project where creative design solutions are helping to reinforce the value and the vision of that project and what's going to make it successful.
So you've got all these different tools at your disposal, and depending on the project or the client, you're kind of turning knobs to either amplify or de-amplify certain skill sets, right?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
And for our listeners, and we've referenced this on a couple of different episodes now, but the innovation framework was covered in a previous episode, and there'll be a link in the show notes to this one if you'd like to re-listen to that. Chelsea, even though you're calling yourself a generalist, you still gain technical expertise in multiple areas over time, I would imagine. How do you seek that out on a continual basis?
Well, architecture is a hard one to say that you're an expert in my mind, because it's just a continual learning process. That's why they call it the practice of architecture. Often you'll hear it referred to that way. So for me, you may say that I have a lot of expertise in things like freestanding emergency departments, because I've done probably almost 15 of them in my career. But you may also say that I have a lot of technical expertise in the building enclosure, because typically I've worked on the exterior of a building and thought about ways to keep water out and light coming in or out, depending on what kind of space is behind the wall. But my approach to this is really just to dive right in and see what I can learn on each and every project. And so I don't love saying that I have a particular expertise, because I love being curious about each project and what it's going to teach me.
I've had the opportunity when we're in Raleigh to talk to you on several different occasions. I just find, do you think that there are character, like I see you and I hear praise about you a lot from different projects, and that it feels almost like you're a jack of all trades. And that's another way, I guess, of saying a generalist, right? But are there character traits that you can identify in yourself, or is it more of a mindset or soft skills? Like, how would you define what makes you you?
Oh man, you're asking me some very self-aware questions. Oh, what makes me me? I think it's a lot of this balance of trying to succeed at any goal you put in front of me. It's a balance of adaptability, I'll say. I take things one thing at a time, which I think has served me well in motherhood, as well as architecture. And I'm not afraid to improve and constantly improve and learn about new things.
Okay, I will stop with the self-pontificating and inner workings.
I don't know. What makes me me? I'm just Chelsea, and sometimes that's all I can be.
You didn't know you were joining a therapy session this morning, did you?
I did not.
What are some unique challenges that you faced in a project, and how did you go about solving them?
Oh, this is a good question, because I feel like every project has its own set of unique challenges that you have to try to navigate. The one that stands out in my mind right away is actually the very first project I worked on when I joined BSA. It's the UC Health Stedman Hawkins Clinic in Denver. And so this is a sports medicine clinic and physical therapy center. It also has an ambulatory surgery center for orthopedics associated to it. And they treat not just everyday injuries, but also professional athletes and collegiate athletes at all. So anyone at all levels. So it was a really interesting challenge to navigate the design challenges that come with that. It's not just your traditional healthcare clinic. It had to be a bit elevated, and the orthopedic doctors there really pushed our design team. So some of the challenges that we had to think about, you know, I'm a short little lady. I'm just about 5'2" on a good day. And so, you know, you think about professional athletes that are in basketball or football, and these are some big people, some tall people. And so you think about access through a facility like that in a very specific way. Are your elevators big enough? Are your doorways big enough? Are your hallways big enough? You know, like, are you accommodating the people in this place that they're going to treat them? Not, that's just one small part of it. But, you know, these physicians were incredible to work with. I will always love working with physical therapy and orthopedics, because they are so motivating. So one of the things that they kept challenging us on was how to get this clinic bathed in natural light. And when you're looking at a traditional healthcare clinic setup or any kind of OR space, even, there is a depth that you need to be able to function properly. And that depth does not align with the depth that you would need to naturally daylight a building. And so it became a real challenge for us to balance the operational needs and flows of the clinic. UC Health had a prototypical clinic layout that BSA had helped develop earlier. And so we were trying to infuse that prototype, but also this challenge of getting light into the building. And so specifically positioning things like our physical therapy room, where not only when you enter the building, you can see that space and get motivated to heal and perform and kind of get back up to that next level. It's also just bathed in light. And we know that light has healing properties. And so that's one aspect of it. And that was kind of the easier challenge, is just positioning that large space. But it was a bigger challenge to get light into the clinic module itself, because we had an OR suite on the very top floor. We had two floors of clinic space. And so they're kind of buried into the heart of the building. And so we had to navigate some technical challenges with the building code, but we were able to introduce these light shafts going through the building. Huh. And really arrange critical spaces around these. So it's not necessary. Often we give natural light to the exam room or the treatment room where the patients go, but we realized that they weren't spending much time there. And so we were also trying to optimize the performance of the physicians and the caregivers. And so putting the natural light in the clinic space into the hallway and where the care team station was really gave us a lot of benefit to that clinic layout.
And it's an absolutely beautiful building. I'll put a link in the show notes for that project as well, so people can check it out and see some of the different components that you were talking about. When you're a design lead, when you're working on a project like that, how do you collaborate with the other team members and stakeholders to sort of accomplish some of these different milestone tasks that you're talking about?
Well, Brian, collaboration is my middle name. Just call me Chelsea Collaboration Greenmore.
There we go.
I feel like most of the time, collaborator could be my title role more so than architect or designer. So I think that, you know, as we're talking about this conversation, we're talking about my role as this kind of generalist in the practice of architecture. And I couldn't be that way without constantly communicating with other people on the project.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just one person designing a project and making it a success. It is a whole team of people. I really think of things in my motto as work hard, play hard. And so, you know, I'm trying to achieve a vision, but we need to enjoy ourselves along the way. And
absolutely.
Hopefully collaboration is fun for everyone involved. Like there may be challenges and rubs at times, but working through that should be fun, and you should trust and respect each other. And so I bring that to every project, whether it's, you know, working with an owner, working with a consultant, working with our own internal team members. And, you know, I referenced the alignment phase of the innovation framework earlier, but, you know, it's so critical, because when you're collaborating, you need to know where you are steering the ship and which way you need to row to be successful as a team.
And have everybody rowing in that same direction, right?
Absolutely. And so Communication and collaboration is just absolutely critical in that sense.
Chelsea, Communication and Collaboration Greenmore.
There we go.
You'll be a four-name person. There you go. Let's talk about some emerging trends. Any trends or new technologies that you're excited about in regards to design and architecture?
Yeah, I think visualization is always a huge discussion in the design world. Our clients just don't read flat drawings, and the world is not flat, right? Like, newsflash, our world is three-dimensional. The earth is round. So I think visualization and really trying to see spaces and show our clients, you know, what we are designing is so critical. And we need to start pairing visualization with AI. Yep. I'm excited to see where that's going to go, so that we can build on our iterative process as designers in a more efficient and quick way. I think that when you talk about this, you know, there's always parameters that influence us in design, and there's things that are constantly changing or things that are staying the same, and each project is a little bit unique. And so I think that this type of emerging trend in AI and visualization can really help influence the way that we think about design and how quickly we can get design out there. But I'm not saying that we eliminate the designer or the human aspect of it
sure.
in any way.
Right.
Because we need it all to work together.
Yeah, and just coming up with maybe multiple options a little faster, right? I mean, who doesn't love a good rendering? I mean, you know, you put it at the right time of day or you've got some night shots and it can draw people in for sure. So,
well, they need exciting. To tell a story about the building. You know, how do they evoke emotion and how do they start to give you a sense of what this place will really mean and what it will impact for others?
I wanted to ask about a couple projects that you're working on right now with some interesting aspects to them. Can you share a little bit about them? I didn't know if you wanted to talk about these or not.
I would love to talk about them. I highlighted it because I needed to go back to them. So I have two really remarkable and impactful projects right now on the boards. Both of them, interestingly, cross over our markets of all three, really, healing, learning, and discovery. The first one is East Carolina University, or ECU. It's the Brody School of Medicine Edition, which is a high-rise facility and being added onto their existing high-rise facility. Its true aim is to preserve and enhance the culture of the school. They have a really unique culture. They're trying to create an architecture that is consistent with their reputation. They're trying to promote well-being and obviously provide really highly effective and adaptable spaces for teaching and learning. The school is so unique and so special because they really open up career pathways for hundreds of underrepresented learners.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so they are really trying to get physicians in underserved communities. So not only are the people who want to become, if you want to become a doctor, you can become a doctor there, but you know, hopefully you can bring that back to your community where probably healthcare is underserved.
Right.
And so they're trying to do that with the North Carolina region and beyond. When you think about the impact that makes, it's just really humbling to be part of a project like that.
Yeah. And that's a bullseye for our mission statement, right?
Absolutely.
Creating inspired solutions that improve lives. That's hitting the nail on the head for sure.
Absolutely. We've partnered with the Smith Group on this project, and it's really been a great collaboration with them. The team that we have in place just gets along so well. And so it's a big testament to the power of collaboration, as we talked about earlier. This program really will allow Brody School of Medicine to increase its total student population. They're going to be able to have not just interior gathering spaces, but exterior gathering spaces for their entire cohort. And so those spaces are intended not just for instruction, but also for interaction and celebration. They're going to bring their simulation and standardized patient programs back to their campus. It's currently in a remote location. There's a whole set of simulation floors that are designed to integrate other programs on the campus for some interprofessional education as well. One thing that is missing from their existing space is a lot of collaboration and study space for students that helps promote their well-being. And if you can imagine becoming a doctor, there's a lot of high stress. And so the building is trying to promote their own well-being. They don't have a lot of access to natural daylight. So this building is really bathed in light, I will say. And there's all kinds of types of seating and study spaces that you can try to go to. And at the very top, call it almost the jewel of the building, is this floor of lab space. And so it's going to house their gross anatomy labs, as well as their what we're calling the super lab. And it is a very large lab. It can accommodate 144 learners at one time. And you're thinking to yourself, how do you maintain safety in that? And we have a lot of ways that we're doing that with their large instructional lab for things like microbiology and anatomy and some other courses that they're going to have in that super lab. But it's very scalable and flexible for them.
If we're talking about projects, and maybe it's that one, I've got to ask, what's your all-time favorite project that you've worked on so far, of course?
Asking me about my favorite project is kind of like asking me about which is my favorite child. You know, a little piece of every designer goes into their design. And so I've been a part of a lot of great projects, and it's really hard for me to say which is my favorite. I don't really have a favorite color either. Favorites are not one of my things as a person. I love seeing the value in everything.
That's a really interesting way, because, you know, a lot of people, when they're, what's your favorite musical artist or what's your favorite color, you know, and
they have a firm I like
that perspective. Good for you. Just one more question I wanted to kind of finish with asking, what kind of advice would you give to students or younger architects trying to decide between, you know, maybe becoming highly specialized or an expert in one specific thing, or kind of remaining a broadly skilled generalist like yourself?
I tell them you really have to find your own way and follow your own passions. With that being said, when you're early on in your career, it's very important to expose yourself to all different facets of this profession. There's things that they don't really teach you in school that are part of this profession. And so, you know, just trying to gain that experience is so critical, and just trying new things and finding what's right for you or what's not right for you is really important. I know for me personally, my desire to try new things and to continually improve has taken me much farther than I ever anticipated.
I like that. I just saw this the other day. It was something on social media, and it was, instead of being interesting, try to be interested, and just having a constant interest in learning new things and trying new things. I think that's a great perspective. Thank you for joining me. This was such a great conversation. I knew it would be fun.
Thanks again to Chelsea for joining us on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with Chelsea on LinkedIn. And if you're interested in learning more about BSA Life Structures, we encourage you to visit our website at bsalifestructures.com. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information, as well as links to the Innovation Framework episode and the UC Stedman Hawkins project that Chelsea discussed. Be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, YouTube Music, and Spotify. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.